This is a Connectability Radio production.
The Shared Learning Forum series of workshops brought to you by Connectability.ca and DSTO.com. Living with Autistic Spectrum Disorder with Navreet Banga from Geneva Center for Autism, Dinah Cebulski from Carey's Place Autism Services, Matthew Green and Rachel Cohen.
Welcome all of you this Halloween morning to Shared Learning Session this morning. Our guest speakers on ASV are Navreet and Dinah, and we're going to take it all from there.
Hi, my name is Navreet. I work at Geneva Center for Autism. I do the intake for adult services. We're going to talk a little bit about ASV. I know it's Halloween. It's not as scary as you think it is. ASV, you'll learn to love it. As we do. This is my co-presenter.
Hi, I'm Dinah Cebulski. I work at Carey's Place Autism Services. I'm an autism consultant there. And like Navreet said, most of our presentation isn't scary, but for the next part, we just have a couple of questions. Does anyone have seizure disorder?
No.
Okay, is anyone afraid of needles? No, brave souls. Okay, and I would just ask that you move your coffees away from the outside of the chair.
Maybe it's a little scary.
Yeah, just a little. Okay.
So I'm going to start by reading a passage from The Curious Incident of the Boy in the Nighttime. It's a wonderful novel. If any of you have had the chance to read it, you'll know how wonderful it is. If not, I highly suggest it. It's a good read. Quick read. So I'm just going to read a passage from this book. This is for two main reasons. The first main reason is that people do a lot of talking without using any words. Especially when I use a lot of words. You know what? I'm not sure if you can help me with any of these other places. But I'm not sure that because you have to use a lot of words, you can use a lot of words. It's kind of like trying to get these things right now. So, this is a new one. The second main reason is that people are often taught using metaphors. These are examples of metaphors. I lost my sock off. He was the apple of my eye. They had a skeleton in the cupboard. We had a real pig of a day. That dog is stone dead. The word metaphor means saying something from one place to another, and it comes from the Greek word meta, which means one place to another, and theta, which means to carry. It is when you describe something by giving a word, something that isn't, it means that the word is a metaphor. So that's an example of being overloaded with different sensory stimulation. This was a really extreme and exaggerated example. We wanted everybody to kind of get the idea of what it's like to be overloaded sensorially. It doesn't have to be that extreme though, or that exaggerated. An example is, it's that time of year, and it's going to start snowing soon. And if you're driving to a new area, to a home that you don't know, or an area that you don't know, and all of a sudden it starts freezing rain, what's the first thing you typically do? Most people will turn down the radio. And listening to the radio is not going to impact your driving. But people think that turning down the radio and blocking off their auditory sensory will help them visually. It's the same thing with people with an ASD. Sometimes it's hard to filter out what it is that they need to attend to and what it is that they have to filter out, and that's not that important to listen to or see or taste or touch.
Mm-hmm. For people with an ASD, they usually have difficulty with sensory integration, and like Navreet was saying, you know, it's the little things like the flickering of the lights or the buzzing of the lights or a conversation, you know, a couple rooms away. And our speakers in our second part of our presentation will kind of talk a little bit more about that.
So under the autism umbrella, there of course is autism, there's Asperger's syndrome, which we'll be explaining a little bit more about. There's pervasive developmental disorder, not otherwise specified. You guys know that as PDD-NOS, or PDD. There's also childhood disintegrative disorder, and also Rett syndrome, and they all fall under the umbrella of autism.
For the purposes of our presentation, I'm just aware of And we're just going to focus on the autism and the Asperger, but remembering that it is an umbrella or a spectrum, so, you know, people fall at different areas on the spectrum, and our executive director actually says that he believes everyone is on the spectrum at some point, so.
It's just whether or not you get diagnosed.
Yeah. Okay, so autism is a form of PDD that is typically diagnosed prior to age 3. We've heard that, you know, it can be diagnosed as early as 18 months as well. It's characterized by a delay in the development of speech and may coincide with the presence of other developmental delays of varying degrees. Is known to generally affect the development and functioning of individuals in the three areas of communication, behavior, and social interaction, also known as the triad of impairments. The triad of impairments, the social interaction, the language and communication and behavior, they all intersect. So they're all impacting each other.
And to receive a diagnosis of autism, each area is affected on some level.
Mm-hmm. So diagnosis is made through the DSM-4 or the revised version, and there's a checklist, and people have to have so many characteristics in each of the three areas for a diagnosis of autism.
Asperger's syndrome. So if autism spectrum disorder is a spectrum and it's a continuum, then Asperger's syndrome would be on the, which way am I, on the high end of the spectrum. So what it says, Asperger's syndrome is a form of PDD, which is pervasive developmental disorder, generally characterized by typical speech and cognitive development, and therefore tends to be diagnosed at later developmental stages or even adulthood. Myself doing intake for adult services, I see a huge surge of people in their 40s and 50s finally being diagnosed and saying, I think I may have Asperger's syndrome. And they were just able to cope with it. It wasn't that noticeable, I guess, growing up, and they were able to cope with it. It's generally marked by more subtle, yet potentially more deeply felt difficulties in terms of social interaction. And that's the biggest biggest challenge for people with Asperger's syndrome is that social piece. Intellectually, their IQ is either average or above average. So it's really difficult to kind of see somebody who's a genius in school, but socially just can't maintain a conversation or can't have those very typical social interactions. Bill Gates comes to mind for us. Mm-hmm. Not diagnosed officially, but definitely someone that we wonder about. Asperger's syndrome is often characterized by restricted or very specialized areas of interest, as well as difficulties with executive functioning. Executive functioning is the planning, knowing that today, maybe a few days ago you went out and got candy or got a costume and got ready for today, or knowing that you have an exam on a certain day, you know to kind of start studying a few weeks before to prepare for that day. It's that executive function that doesn't happen, and it's the day of that they finally realize, oh, I have an exam today, I probably should have prepared. Asperger's syndrome is also sometimes referred to problematically as high-functioning autism.
Social messages are about 7% of what you say, 38% of how you say it, and 55% in what you look like or how you're acting when you say it. If you think about just even, you know, day-to-day activities such as going out and having dinner, you know, how do you summon the waiter or the waitress? Just, you know, kind of the things that we just sort of inherently learned that we weren't really taught. People with Asperger's syndrome have difficulty with the just kind of the social nonverbal language. So they kind of get a little bit, 7% of what you say, but the rest of it is kind of a little bit more difficult.
It's also difficult to kind of concentrate on one, on more than one thing at a time. Not only are you looking at the person and listening to the person, not just looking at their face, but also looking at their whole body to see the body language and the entire package. And we're able to do that so easily, and it's really difficult for somebody with an autism spectrum disorder to do that. So either they hear what you're saying, or see how you're saying it, or they're watching your lips move, or they're hearing the tone of your voice. Sometimes it's really difficult to put all those pieces together to make up the whole package of what it is exactly that somebody is saying and meaning while they're saying it.
Mm-hmm. And a common area that people have difficulty with is making eye contact. And again, that might be something that you may have noticed in the people that you, you work with. So, and, you know, we express a lot through our eyes, obviously. And sometimes, you know, our eyes are misleading, you know, compared to what our mouth is actually saying. So every individual with ASD is exactly that, you know, individual. I have not, in my years of, you know, working with people with ASD, ever met anyone who, you know, presents exactly the same. So, yeah, the characteristics are far and few. Okay. So some of the typical characteristics are they may experience an insistence on sameness or resistance to change, often experience rigidity of thought and behavior. And if you think about it, if, you know, earlier with the sensory overload, if, you know, they're paying attention to things that are going on in the room that, you know, we're able to filter out, you can kind of see how, you know, routines and sameness is important to kind of make sense of their world when they're having to, you know, kind of deal with all the extra sensory stuff that's coming at them. They may have difficulty in expressing needs, and they may rely more on nonverbal methods of communication. They may repeat certain words or phrases, as someone said, in place of typical responsive language. They may laugh, cry, show distress for reasons not readily apparent to others, or may display emotion that seems inappropriate to the situation.
They may prefer to seem or prefer to be alone than a typical individual. They may have difficulty with mixing with others and social skills or with social adaptation. From our experiences, we think that it's maybe because it's so difficult to know what the social rules are. It's so difficult to pretend to be interested in somebody if you're not really interested or focus so hard on what somebody is saying and what they're meaning, that it's just physically exhausting. That's something that I've heard quite typically from the individuals that we support. It's like, it's just exhausting to be in social situations. So they may seem to prefer to be alone. It's just exhausting sometimes to be with other people. They also may not enjoy physical contact the same way as typical individuals, and that goes back to the touch sensory. Sometimes the most gentlest touch can be painful or itchy to somebody with autism. So it's not that they might not enjoy that physical closeness, it's just that touch is painful to them. They also may have difficulty making eye contact. They also may be unresponsive to generally prescribed teaching methods. So it's always important to learn how somebody, for us to recognize how somebody learns and to teach them in that manner. Typical characteristics continue. They may spin, balance, twirl, or throw objects in unusual ways or circumstances. They may develop inappropriate attachments to objects and get stuck. They may have difficulty in being aware of environmental dangers. They may experience uneven gross or fine motor skills. So you probably have heard that typically for people with Asperger's, well, some people with Asperger's, they prefer to work on the computer as opposed to, you know, writing. That's what I've noticed with a lot of the youth that are in my social skills groups. They love the computer, and their writing is sometimes it's a little bit harder for them to do. They may not be responsive to verbal cues in the same way as a typical individual. We're also going to give you some benefits of having an autism spectrum disorder. We wanted to list these because we wanted people to keep them in mind when you're looking for a volunteer placement for somebody that you support, or employment, or even if somebody comes and applies at your agency with an ASD. There are many benefits to hiring somebody with autism spectrum disorder. I didn't think this was going to be a commercial, but evidently it is. Here's my sales pitch. So, individuals with ASD tend to be more detail-oriented and have better memories. They also are able to focus or concentrate on a single task for long periods, incredibly proficient and develop high levels of expertise within specific fields, able to look at situations or problems with new or different perspectives, able to open others' minds to new perspectives, views, and modes of thought, more open and honest when sharing opinions and beliefs, and more clear and precise in their communication efforts. I would love to hire somebody that has these characters, because we're able to just do things instinctively, we just do them without even thinking about them, sometimes things get lost. I probably have said 50 times already during this presentation. That was totally unintentional. But somebody that has an ASD would think a lot more before they speak. Their thoughts would be a lot more organized, and they'd be a lot more clear in what they're saying.
Do not assume that someone with autism stops learning at age 18, 21, 30, or even 40. Your development did not end at that age, and neither will your child's. With encouragement and support systems, people with autism can continue to learn throughout their lives, just like everyone else. And I think it actually has, who said that? It's Charles Hart in A Parent's Guide to Autism.
We also just wanted to give people some acronyms that that are typically used when talking about somebody with an ASD. So GCA, Geneva Center for Autism. KPAS is Carey's Place Autism Services. ASD, Autism Spectrum Disorder. AS, the short form for Asperger Syndrome. PDD, as we've explained in PDD-NOS, is Pervasive Developmental Disorder, and not otherwise specified. IBI and ABA are two interventions that are used mostly for children. You may have heard it in the media that there's now funding, a lot more funding, to help with intensive behavioral intervention and applied behavioral analysis for children. SLP is a speech and language pathologist. OT is an occupational therapist, PT is a physical therapist, and BC is behavioral communication.
We're fortunate enough to have two speakers, like I said, that are going to tell us how it is firsthand living with an ASD. Our first speaker is Matt Green, and we also have Rachel Cohen. But Matt's going to go first.
Hi, I'm Matt. I'm 20 years old. I have autism. And I have three other disabilities as well, one being epilepsy, one being scoliosis, and the other being attention deficit disorder. When I first found out I had all four of them, I thought they were negative things. And the first thought that came to my mind was, I can't do anything in the future. I can't play basketball, I can't play hockey, I can't do this, I can't do that. But I figured out this year and last year that I can turn it into a positive thing having disabilities by just learning to accept it and just telling people about it, opening up myself, telling people that I have disabilities, and I'm actually proud of it now. I'm actually saying a lot of like the 50 times last time. Sorry. I'll try to cut that down a bit. You can count. Again. Yeah, so I'm really busy these days. But I actually have a part-time job now. I'm working at a Canadian Tire, and I've been working there almost a year now. What my position is called is a night coat position. What we do is we restock shelves after the store closes at 9 p.m. And I'm most glad when it closes because of all the stupid customers that come in. I'll tell you one customer I got was my first day, someone approached me and she was just a regular person, I thought, and she asked me, where can I buy a shopping cart? Can you help me? Where can I buy one of these? So I just look at her, I tell her, my face just lights up, trying not to laugh. I'm like, okay, you have to see customer service about that. They'd help you out great there. So, yeah, I've been working there 12 months, and it's been going great. But how I got that job was I went through a job training program, and I went there. They support people who are unemployed, for people who have disabilities. There are people not in school anymore. I actually quit college 2 years before that. I was having multiple seizures because of my epilepsy. One sensory I have is the flashing lights I was going on earlier. I had to just stare at the ground for a few minutes. Yeah, I quit college after 4 months. It was actually a one-year program, so left early. I had about, from what I can remember, it was 6 seizures. Could have been more, over 12, 14. So I began falling back on assignments. Began, my grades went down 30s, 40s, 50s. I wasn't at the school much. I wasn't able to attend out for several weeks. And so I didn't make very much friends in college. So I got introduced to the Geneva Center, and I attended their social club on a Tuesday evening. And now I attend their Thursday social club because of my new job. And well, up to March of this year, I thought, well, I don't want to be just working part-time all the my whole life, just being a sock boy. I don't want to look like that when I have kids. Daddy, what do you do? I sock shelves. I put things on shelves. So I'm thinking, you know, I want to do other things. And well, I thought, you know, I just want to help people. I want to tell people about my disabilities, just share it, tell people how it is, how I cope with it. So I began doing an introduction to autism at the Geneva Center. If you actually come there, you'll actually see me when adults come in. It's usually parents, teachers, some students. And they seem to be pretty inspired by them. Some have emailed me, asked me questions about future references for them. And, well, I still have only that to do, just the speeches once a month. So I thought, okay, I might as well do some more volunteer work. So I went to the Geneva Center and said, you know what I want to do? I want to kind of advertise what autism is. So I said, can you hook me up with someone who can help me out in that department? So on a Monday, I got hooked up with someone. And so now I'm working in the volunteering and fundraising department. Been doing that for several months now. Do that twice a week. And I organize events and make references out to businesses, research businesses. Go out to meet like employers, and well, I still thought that wasn't enough. I wanted to do more than that. So the program that helped me find a job last year, well, I thought, why not do it for them? I've aced 4 interviews before. Every interview I've done, I've gotten the job. So I thought I might as well help the participants there now. And I've been doing that for about 2 or 3 months. I prep them for interviews. I help them out in that department. I do job searching for them, attend interviews with them. And I feel like I'm doing a lot for them. So I first found out when I had autism. I was 4 years old. When I was in kindergarten, I was a non-social kid. Didn't like to talk to people, didn't like to join in group conversations. At recess, I would go in the corner, and only had one friend I would hang out with for all of elementary school. The only real interest that came in elementary school I had was art. I did that for about 4 years, and I did drawing. The grade 8s and grade 7s were really impressed by it, and won competitions against other schools, but eventually I just quit because, well, there was this one competition and we were supposed to get a pizza lunch, and we always enjoyed pizza lunches. This was in grade 7. So I won the art competition and never heard back from the pizza place. I quit art. I still pick up drawing every once in a while, but
I'll give you pizza.
Thank you. Yeah, so after that, I might as well, since I'm not doing art and there's not much else I'm doing in life, might as well try something physical. Can't do basketball. My legs are shaped differently than other people. My chest is shaped differently than other people by scoliosis. So I took up Taekwondo, attended a special class for the others with disabilities, and did that until I was 18 years old. I won a few medals in competitions, and I moved up to a red belt. And I'm pretty proud of that. But after that, I was just finishing high school. Grade 11, I smoked for about a year. But after that, later in the year, I quit that because I figured my health is just more important. One of the main things I liked in high school was like music. A teacher introduced me to music. I picked up some instruments, played acoustic guitar, keyboard, piano, backup vocals, and percussions, which I played in a stage band for half a year. One class I excelled in was math. I got 95s in that, and I got 100s and 98s in music. But other than that, the last, in grade 12 of my high school, I was asked not to come back for emotional reasons. They thought I was a violent person, which I don't believe. So my friends were wondering where I am, but I actually got to attend prom. So that's good. And then I went a bit before college, was this summer. And some hectic things came then. Got in a car crash. Wait, no, first had surgery, my lung collapsed, and I healed from that after 2 weeks, and I thought I was better 3 days later, one day before college, got in a car crash. And luckily I was not hurt, able to go to college the next day, and kind of brag about it. It's still funny to this day. So yeah, lots of things have been going on in my life recently, and I'm really happy now. This past year I've gotten over being shy, like in high school, elementary. If we had a project to present, I would sit in the corner and hide behind my desk, not wanting to talk to anyone. But now I'm able to get up in front of people, and my legs don't shake as much anymore. I still move my hands when I talk to people. That's just a habit I have. But I'm glad I've gotten over that shyness. As far as my personality goes, I'm really big into sports and music. Some people call me a nerd when it comes to sports. Really into statistics and mathematics. One thing I'd like to do recently was traveling. I went to Panama last year for New Year's, and one thing, a valuable lesson I learned is that guys dance like crap on the dance floor. I get on the dance floor and I'm thinking, okay, I look at the ladies and they're dancing wonderfully, and I'm just waving my hands around, waiting for someone to come over to me. So that was a great experience, and then I came back and thought, you know, people are coming up to me in Panama, talking to me in Spanish, and I don't know what to say. So what I did, I attended a place called the Spanish Center here, and would they have a Spanish lesson, so took some Spanish lessons, learned a bit, and I didn't learn too much. I still remember three words, which is beer, cerveza, hola, hi. And that should be pretty valuable. I'm going to Costa Rica soon. So I took a salsa class as well. I was the only guy there, felt kind of embarrassed. I thought I learned a bit of footwork. I'm still not that good at dancing, but hopefully for future reference I can kind of show that I can dance, just dance for a little bit, like average, and be better than all the other guys in the desert. So I'm hoping now when a girl comes up to me now in Spanish and talking to me in Spanish, I can actually respond. Like, Cerveza over there, pointing to the bar. Hold on. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to going to Costa Rica, and yes, I'm going there for 1 week. We're going on the 11th of December, staying there for a week. Then we come back, we do Christmas and New Year's, and then, oh yeah, so I really like Christmas. It's a special holiday for me, and so Halloween, it's Halloween now, and, well, my costume sort of is I have glasses that are dollar signs. I had a wig, which is a dreadlocks. I lent that to my boss yesterday for some reason. He's bald. And so today he's going to go running around the store talking to customers and get pictures of that. So maybe if I see you all again, I'll hopefully entertain you with the bald guy wearing an Indian wig, dreadlocks. And so, Halloween tonight should be a special night for me. I'm just going to go to the Mandarin with my girlfriend and see a movie or something. And we've only been going out for a while. And yesterday, she wanted me to meet her dad before she comes over to my house. So I had to meet the parents. Kind of awkward. So that's going that well in that front. I don't like to reveal anything about that. If you have any questions, talk about that stuff. So life's good now, and after these continuing these speeches, and hopefully I'm getting paid to do these, because a lot of people seem to be entertained when I do speeches, so hoping I get paid pretty well. Hopefully that'll be a full-time job. Not sure I could do that 8 hours a day, 9 to 5. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. So, yeah. Questions?
So, thanks, Matt. Our next speaker is Rachel.
Okay, my name is Rachel, and I have Asperger's, although I've come to realize that maybe, like, I don't quite get the distinction. I mean, I know that autism generally has a speech delay, but I find with adults with Asperger's and an adult with high-functioning autism, there may not be a difference noticeable. So I don't know why people make such a distinction about that. I mean, as a kid, maybe it makes sense. I don't know. But anyway, so I also have a mental health problem. I don't know quite what it is, but I take medication. But I think that's, like, I wasn't diagnosed with Asperger's until I was about 20. And I think one of the reasons for that was, well, Asperger's became an official diagnosis, I think, in 1994. By then I was already 12, so by then I already had mental health problems. So they were dealing with that, didn't quite know what was going on, and I went to a school with not such great... I always did well in school, like... You give me something to do, like homework, and I get it done. You give me a sheet to fill out with spelling, I have it done before anyone else. So as long as I was doing well in school, nobody thought maybe there's something else. And also, I didn't have a problem speaking. Like, I actually learned how to talk. I spoke words at 6 months old, and my mom told me, well, you know how moms exaggerate, but she said that when I was 18 months, I told her that the dress was very feminine. But knowing words and knowing how to speak does not necessarily mean you know how to explain or communicate to people what you need or have a conversation necessarily. or explain what you want, like, I'd have a tendency to just grab my parents and push them in the direction I wanted them to go, or, you know, not really ask people to do stuff all the time. Like, I mean, I did sometimes, but it was more... And feelings that weren't physical were completely foreign to me until I was about 15. Was maybe even later. And I was downright adamant that it was this big hoax that people were pulling, that there was something called feelings that had nothing to do with hurting, being cold, being hungry, you know, the other kind of feelings. It didn't make any sense to me. I didn't know how you could be hurt if you're not in pain. And I was much older before I figured out what that was all about. So when I was a kid, trying to tell people how things were for me, you know, what's going on, what I'm experiencing, and for the most part, I didn't even know what I was experiencing, know what I was feeling. I just got kind of locked in, I guess. I don't know. So in school, kids were horrible to me. I had a few friends, like maybe one or two, but I'd only really do well in a social situation with them alone, not as a group so much. If there was a group situation, I'd have a lot more difficulty, so recess was horrible. I liked to read at recess, but the other kids liked to pick on me at recess, so it was, you know, I hear some people sometimes say, oh, I was in school, nobody knew I existed, it was so horrible, but I would have traded anything for people to have known I didn't exist. And people always knew who I was, but not in a good way. They'd push other kids into me and go, ooh, you touched Rachel Cohen, now you have to go burn your clothes, and stuff like that, and worse stuff. So, school was not fun. Although I continued to get A's and A pluses, and especially in math, I'm very good at calculus. I'm not so good at social studies, I can write an essay all right, but whether I don't really enjoy it or get it all the time. I'm much better communicating and writing than speaking. And I find that as my stress level increases, my ability to communicate decreases. If I'm really stressed, I might not be able to say much. Like, I mean, I've called my worker sometimes on the phone really stressed out, and I say, blah, blah, blah. Like, because I can't speak anymore. And then sometimes if I'm really, really stressed out, I can't interact at all. Like, it's like I'm stuck in a glass box, and people are talking to me, and I can hear them, and sometimes I can, you know, figure out what they want, but sometimes I just can't at all deal with it, or listen to what they're saying, or talk to them. So people say, talk to me, what's wrong? I can't. So what am I supposed to do? I do Special Olympics. Right now I am involved in 6 sports. Swimming, floor hockey, bowling, curling, basketball. I start next week. Well, I would have started yesterday, except there was some complications with that. I was supposed to have a floor hockey game, which got canceled, so I didn't get to go to basketball or floor hockey. And then, baseball is in the summer, so I'm not playing that right now, but I have it in the summer. And I live at this place called AIS. It's for people with mental health issues, and who have been homeless, because I used to live in a shelter, so I got into that place, and they have activities there. I have a worker there who comes about once a week, but I can talk to whenever I need to, pretty much, and I have another worker at Geneva Center who helps me, and I have another worker who comes I go to Variety Village all the time for my sports. And I have a job working with my mom. She works in a law firm, and so I open and close files, bind stuff, photocopy, anything they need me to do. It's a good job for me because my mom's there to talk to if I need, like, to ask a question, and there's not too many people there that I have to actually deal with. Like, there's only a few people, so, and it's quiet, so that's good. And if there's an anomaly in the record keeping, or if there's a number that isn't the same as the number over there, I notice things like that, and I'm very detail oriented. Like, I can tell when something is different and fix it, or, you know, you tell me a number of a file, I'll remember it for like a while, or I just notice those kind of things. And it's a good job because the other girl makes a lot of mistakes, so I can fix them before they get any more serious. Like, at one point, she was numbering the boxes and went from 900 to 1,000. And I think there's about 3 box 110. So, I have some sensory issues. My hearing is very acute. I can hear higher pitch than normal, like dog whistles and stuff, but also louder than normal. So often if I go to a movies or to a concert, well, I might not want to go to a concert. It might be too loud, even with the earplugs. But stuff like that, I wear earplugs, so that helps it not be too loud. Or if I'm in a crowded room or something, I might put on my earplugs. I carry them with me all the time. My eyes are sensitive to the light, and so I wear sunglasses and a hat, and sometimes my eyes still hurt, but I don't know what else to do. When I was a kid, activities outside I would normally have enjoyed, I didn't, because my eyes hurt, and I didn't know how to tell my parents that I needed sunglasses, back then the only clip-on sunglasses, because I had glasses since I was 8, that you could wear were these big huge things that make you look like a fly. And I didn't want to wear them, so so my eyes just hurt. I remember going to Myrtle Beach when I was 17, and I think I spent 90% of the time inside watching Animal Planet because my eyes were in pain the whole time. So that wasn't so much fun. I don't like to look at people when I talk. It's very difficult for me. Like, especially if it's a new person, or if I'm stressed, like if I'm meeting someone new, or if I'm really stressed out, the closest I can get to looking someone in the eyes is looking at their mouth. Like, I can watch their mouth move. When I watch TV, I tend to look at people's mouths move instead of anything else. And an interesting thing I've been thinking about lately is I never seem to remember a conversation based on who I'm having it with. Instead, I remember a conversation based on what I was looking at the time. So if I was, like, I'll probably remember this conversation when I was here by this, not by who was here or who I was talking to. It'll be whatever I'm looking at or the room I'm in that will come to mind when I think of where I was. And dang it, I lost my thought. Oh yeah, I'm really into crafts by a lot. Like, I'm obsessed with them, kind of. And right now I do knitting, crocheting, cross stitch. Pretty much I do beads, pretty much any craft that you could think of I do. And right now I'm into cable sweaters, and I can't look at someone's cable sweater without staring at it and obsessing about it. Like, when these guys were talking, someone pulled out their cable sweater at the back, and I couldn't stop staring at that dang thing. So I'm knitting a cable sweater now. I'm going to design my own cable scarf. I'm obsessed with them. And, yeah. I'm also obsessed with Lord of the Rings. Not so much now. I used to be a lot more obsessed with it when they were coming out. Now I'm not so much obsessed with them anymore. And I have a cat. No, I have two cats and a dog. They help me out at home because they're there for me, and my dog especially. When I take him to the park, I can talk to people who I normally wouldn't talk to, so I get out and get to talk to people. He's good. Yeah. Oh, I forgot to say, when I was telling you about my eyes and my ears being sensitive, my sense of touch is undersensitive. So, and pain, I don't feel as much. So, that's why I use these things. And when I was a kid, I used to poke myself with stuff. I guess I needed that stimulation, I guess, especially. And when I was in school and we were doing individual work, that was fun. But sitting in a circle it just wasn't working. I mean, I was there physically, but not there otherwise. Although, when they came to me, I still managed to know the answer to whatever kind of question they were asking. But I wasn't fully there, and I would, I guess, poke myself or, you know, I don't know, just something, because I didn't know what I needed, and I don't know what I'm trying to say.
You're saying it very well.
Oh yeah, I do calculus for fun. I love calculus because I love things that are right or wrong. I don't like things that have middles. Like, if someone tells me to do something, and they only tell me kind of a vague description of what they want done, there's no way I can accomplish it. Because there's so many variables. They say wash the table in the kitchen. Which table is involved in the kitchen? Does the counters count as the kitchen table? Do they want me to wash the table next to the kitchen? What do they want me to wash it with? You know, there's too many things to think about, or... So I find that difficult, and if you're doing a game and you're not following the rules, I go crazy, because to me everything has to be right. Like, things can't be half right, and I get really anxious if someone's not, like, there's a sign that says don't do this and someone's sort of doing that. I'm like, well, what if this is that? And then we're going to get in trouble. Or, you know, I get really hung up on rules all the time. Rules of the game, rules of this, rules of that. And if someone's not following it, I get kind of stressed out. And I get stressed out when things change. Like, I stopped watching some of my favorite TV shows because they keep changing all the schedules around. And I find it very difficult when they have something 1 week on a Monday and 1 week on a Tuesday and 1 week at 6 o'clock and 1 week at 7 o'clock. It drives me crazy, and I can't, I'd rather not watch the show than have to deal with all the uncertainty. And instead I watch reruns that I know will be 10 o'clock is Simpsons, and after that is King of the Hill on Channel 4. On Channel 28 is Simpsons, followed by That 70s Show, and at 12 o'clock is South Park, which I hate, but I watch anyway, because it's part of the schedule. And then and then after that, if I'm still up, is Friends, and then after that will come commercials, which I will still watch because it's still part of the schedule. So, and, you know, I hate when things change. Like, if you told me, Rachel, next week on Friday, we're going to cut your leg off. And tomorrow you'll say, next week on Friday, we'll cut your leg off. And then Friday would come, you say, haha, we're just kidding.
I go crazy just because of the change. Obviously, I like my leg, but I can't deal with the change. Like, it just drives me crazy. And actually, I had a worker one time who would call me, we'd have an appointment, and she wouldn't show up, and she wouldn't call me to tell me she wasn't showing up, and I'd get so stressed out, and I start thinking, is she in a car accident? Oh my God, what happened? And then she'd call me an hour later, or I'd eventually call her, and she'd say, oh yeah, I forgot. Or she'd say, I'll call you next week, and then no phone call. So even though I probably could have used the worker, the uncertainty was causing me so much stress, I had to get rid of that worker. So now I don't have one of those workers, although I tried to get them to give me a new one, and they wouldn't listen, so I just said, forget it. This is driving me crazy. I mean, I realize that every once in a while things are going to change, but it's ridiculous when it's changing 90% of the time. And I like things that are in order, too. That's why I like calculus, because it's very systematic. There's an answer. There's a right answer. There's a wrong answer. If you do the equation right, you'll get a right answer. Same with physics. And if you'll do the equation right, there's an answer to the problem. The only reason I had a difficulty doing physics by correspondence was you have to write the lab reports. And again, it was, how detailed do you want me to be? Do you want me to add this step or not? Do you need to know which brand of rubber bands I used? Do you need to know how I tied the rubber bands to the thing? There's just too many variables. It's just driving me nuts. So, but somehow in school, I always did well. In the last 2 years of, well, in high school, I lived a lot in group homes when I was younger, so some of the schools that I went to were part of that group home, part of that program. So I don't know how I managed to get all my credits. Some of them, I think I got by them, the workers at the group home, just putting the credit there. But I did do grade 11 at a school, like a regular high school, but in a small town. It was part of my group home. So I did that. What am I trying to say? But I found it very difficult, the social situation. So by the end of the year, I stopped going. And then in the last years of high school, I went to an alternative school, and it was so much better because there was a few kids, the teachers I knew by name. They all knew my situation. If I was late on something because I was in the hospital, that was okay because I was in the hospital a lot. So it was a much better situation. I ended up with the OAC average of 92, I think. I got 97 in physics and calculus, and English I did well. Well, things were good. Yep, I better stop talking now.
So as you can tell, these are the expert speakers. We were just the preamble. We were the opening act.
So I would like to say thank you to all four of you. I think I speak for everyone in saying that we'll all be leaving here today with a better understanding of and appreciation of ASC. So thank you very much for that. It was really good.